While film production incentives are being hotly debated at the state level in hopes of drawing large-scale movie production, El Paso's independent film scene continues to produce films and filmmakers that are working with little to no financial support, but lots of heart. I'm Charles Horak, and you're listening to On Film. One of the purposes of this show is to occasionally profile local filmmakers and their work. Today's guest has just completed a feature-length crime film titled Paranoid Flux. The film will have its theatrical premiere next week, and I'm happy to have Paranoid Flux's writer, producer, director, and editor, Anthony Salgado, in the studio today. Good morning.
Morning, morning. Thank you for having me here.
Thanks for coming in. With all those hats you wear, how do you keep it all straight?
It's just from the beginning, that's what I was used to. That's how I learned to make films, is just juggling all these.
It's the indie way, right?
Yes, yes, sir, it is.
You have to conceive, make, and post-produce your own work.
Yes, if not, then it's not going to get made, basically, so.
So let's talk about the film. Start off with a synopsis. What is Paranoid Flux? It's mentioned in the intro. It's a crime film, but it's a little different type of crime film.
Yes, Paranoid Flux is just basically a story of a young man, Gabriel Martinez, who feels guilty for a young lady's death. Mm-hmm. At that point, it's just all these characters that are just coming in and out of the story. And that's basically it. It has an experimental feel to it, the indie feel to it. Right. So I just want to see the audience's reaction. I want to know what they think of it.
Begins with a body and you slowly unravel just how that body got there.
Yes, yes.
And who's responsible for the body.
Exactly, exactly.
It's a little on the short side for feature length, but it's certainly longer than a short film. When you went into this, it's, I guess, just over an hour long. You're writing the script, you're working out the details of the production. Were you shooting for a one-hour film, or
is
that just the way the script worked timed out?
Honestly, I was just writing for the story. In the back of my mind, I wanted to shoot for the 80, 90-minute mark, but I figured, well, I think a lot of filmmakers shoot for that, I guess for first-time filmmakers. They want to make that 90-minute film, and sometimes they kind of just fluff the script. And so basically, I went with this story with just having everything there, and it was at the 58-page mark, and I figured, oh, okay, well, this could be a feature film, but a TV film, you know, because, you know, movies on TV, they fluff it with commercials and everything. So I figured, okay, I could kind of say it's a feature, but it is. I mean, it depends who you talk to.
You mentioned you were trying to take a little bit different approach to the genre and be a little more experimental. Two of the things in your film that I don't often see, I see a lot of locally produced films, but I rarely see ones that are made in black and white and in widescreen. Let's talk a little bit about those decisions.
Again, I'm very influenced by Akira Kurosawa.
Great Japanese director.
Yes. And he uses, obviously, black and white. I feel his last movie, Kagemusha, Shadow Warrior, that was in color. But yeah, I just like that aesthetic. I like films that have that. I think it gives it more of a, I guess, a character in itself.
Since it's a crime story, were you also thinking of, you know, the great crime films of the past?
Yeah,
classic, like classic crime films.
Like film noirs, again, movies like Citizen Kane. And as far as the wide shot, wide screen, again, heavily influenced Sergio Leone, a lot of those panoramic shots, wide shots. I feel it gives it a atmospheric tone to it. That's what I wanted to incorporate in the film, is just those techniques. And I've used those in my short films as well.
Of course, El Paso is good landscape for widescreen.
Yes.
We can fill all of that space. Wearing all of these hats, writer, producer, director, editor, I guess it allows a sort of shorthand. How do you communicate, though? All of this stuff's in your head. You conceived of the story. You wrote the story. Because you're directing it and editing it, you've probably already thought exactly how you want it all to go together. But you still are having to work with a crew, albeit a smaller one, because it's an indie. How do you get all of that across to your crew since it's been so locked up in your head for so long?
Again, it just came with practice. Even in my short films, I did everything. And so I think what helped me out was just being very organized. I mean, I storyboarded the whole film.
Yeah, I was curious about that.
Yeah, the whole film I storyboarded.
Which, for those who don't know, it's when a director breaks down every shot and basically preconceives, draws a little sketch of every shot you want to make to tell your story.
And so I figured, well, I did want to hire a camera operator and a cinematographer, but again, funds, I didn't have a lot of funds. And I figured, well, I mean, I don't want to wait. Mm. I just want to do it. So
right.
I got the chunk of the budget to purchase the camera. And I did hire, the only crew person I hired is a professional sound recordist, Carlos Corral.
Of course.
Because I know he mentioned that the two S's, they're very important, story and sound. And that's something that I noticed with a lot of filmmakers, I guess indie filmmakers, is that they don't spend a lot of money in the sound department. They have a great camera.
Right.
But then, you know, when it comes down to editing and the audio is not that great, well, I don't know.
It really is the Achilles heel of most low-budget indie productions, is if you don't have good sound, it will completely take your audience out of the picture. So it's a requisite. And Carlos Corral, of course, is ubiquitous. You see his name on just about every local film coming down the pike. He's very good at what he does. So acting-wise, you were able to cast everyone from the local area. I recognized a lot of the faces. Brian Seeley, who's been on the show, Jenny Robbins, Austin Savage.
Yes, there's a filmmaker. His name is Mark Anthony Love. Mm-hmm. He helped out the casting. He allowed me to use his studio. And that's a great advantage, because in the past, I tried to have casting calls. I tried at the library, and you know, they only have a certain set amount of hours when they're open. I even had it in my own house, which is, I think that's kind of creepy. Mm-hmm. Okay, so he did help me with that, and so that kind of opened the doors. And I met Jenny Robbins. This is her first feature film that she worked on, mm-hmm. And again, him helping me out helped me out tremendously. Again, with the casting, because of I think that's another element is finding the right people for your film. That's can be really hard.
You know, if sound is an Achilles heel, I find music in local films is usually a huge afterthought. But your music is very distinctive. The music and the compositions. Tell me a little bit about the composer, because it adds a great deal to your film, the electronic score that goes with it.
Yes, the music was heavily influenced by John Carpenter.
Mm, I thought so.
Yeah.
Which is not a bad thing.
Yeah. And Philip Glass.
Yeah.
And in all honesty, the composer is actually me. Mm. I'm Mike Strange.
Okay.
Okay.
So using a pseudonym?
Yes.
So we can add that to your hat.
So, yeah, I just added that because I figured, okay, this guy has so many.
Well, it has a very retro 80s, you know, Vangelis, Tangerine Dreamy, mm-hmm. sense to it as well. So, and is John Carpenter a director that you wanted to emulate? He's one of those rare breeds that writes, directs, composes his own music.
Yes, and I think at the same time, what has influenced me the most, the director that's influenced me the most, is Robert Rodriguez. Mm-hmm. I mean, he does everything. So I saw that.
Right.
And so and seeing him as a Latino filmmaker, that gave me more of a boost and confidence, and I figured, hey, I could do it too. I don't consider myself a musician, because a lot of musicians will say, well, no, that's not really music. You gotta have an instrument, a physical instrument.
Right.
I mean, I just compose the music. I do have a musical background. I was in band for 3 years in middle school, so like that helped me out a little bit. So I have composed my short films and other projects. It's just people don't know.
And being the editor of your own films, there's a fine dance between the music and the editing and the pacing. And so it all comes together right there. You've got a screening coming up on Tuesday. This will be the premiere. First
yes.
time anyone other than yourself has seen the finished work?
Yes, sir. Yes. It's
And it's at the Alamo Draft House. Tell us, that's at 7 p.m. on Tuesday?
Yes, it's at 7 p.m. and it ends at 10 p.m. But again, 7 p.m. is you could go and meet and greet with the actors and crew, network.
Kind of a red carpet.
Yeah, basically. And then 8 o'clock is when we're going to show the movie. And then at 9 p.m., that's when we're going to have the Q&A.
Good.
And we should wrap up at 10 p.m.
So none of the cast or crew have seen the finished film?
The only one that has seen it, and I got to say, I'm glad that I showed it to him. And it's Brian Seeley. Mm-hmm. I showed him the film.
Your lead actor.
Yeah. And I know I've read somewhere, like, never show your film to the actors. It might change the... But he did give me some points, and I think it worked out really well. I just didn't want to bore the audience, mm-hmm. and so I had to go back and recut it, I guess cut out the fat, and that's what a lot of people don't want to do. They don't want to kill their darlings.
Right. So this is the first time you're going to see it on a big screen with an audience. What do you hope to get out of that kind of environment?
I hope, as
a filmmaker, does it help you get a better sense of how the audience is feeling about certain scenes and how it flows until you put it in front of a bunch of eyeballs? You know, it's sometimes hard to judge just how your own film is working out.
Yeah, I just want to see the reaction. I want to see if they liked it. What did they get from it? Will it inspire them? I just those conversations that spark from that. I'm just interested in that, and also hope that I inspire other filmmakers here, and they could do the same thing. I mean, it's changed tremendously. Filmmaking is changed, and I think if you have a good support system, you can make a good film.
And El Paso has a great support system, and yes. I know everybody networks, so it's great to see these projects coming together. I certainly wish you the best of luck with Tuesday's screening, and I want to appreciate you coming in today.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Horak. Thank you for having me here.
My guest today has been filmmaker Anthony Salgado. He's just written, produced, directed, and edited, and composed the music for the film Paranoid Flux, which will have its premiere in a special screening event at the Alamo Drafthouse Cinema this coming Tuesday at 7 p.m. And tickets are just $3. You need to reserve them, though, by going to the Paranoid Flux Facebook page, and you can find a link there to get those tickets. A final program note, the Film Salon concludes its series Alfred Hitchcock, The Paramount Years, with a screening of the 1958 masterpiece Vertigo tonight at 7 p.m. at Alamo Drafthouse Cinema. Vertigo stars Jimmy Stewart and Kim Novak in a tale of murder and obsession, and was named the greatest film ever made by the latest Sight and Sound poll. Tickets are in short supply. Reserve them online at drafthouse.com/El Paso. Thanks to Dennis Wu and Evan Walsh for engineering today's show. An archive of past programs is available online at ktep.org. I'm Charles Horak. Thank you for listening to On Film.